If you take out a Bible, if you have one with you this morning, and turn to John chapter 13. If you don't have a Bible with you, there should hopefully be one sitting right in front of you. And as always, I would invite you, you can also take it from the neighbor next to you. They won't care. So John chapter 13, if you would turn there with me, we're going to explore together the words of Jesus surrounding what within the church is probably an often heard story, but really an interesting interaction between Jesus and his closest followers. Again, this is John chapter 13, if you want to turn there. And let's pick up in verse 12. And if you would join me this morning, just doing your best to really listen for the words of Jesus as I read this. John 13, verse 12. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes. Jesus wasn't naked. He was putting his outer garment back on. And returned to his place. Do you understand what I have done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that's what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. We notice from the first few words of this passage that, and if we were to read the preceding verses, we would see this as well, that Jesus has just done something quite personal. Jesus and his closest followers, we call them the disciples, are gathered in an evening meal. And Jesus takes on this very unexpected role that normally the lowest of the house servants would take. He's taken off his outer cloak. He's tied a towel around him, probably over his shoulder as well as around his waist. He's taken a basin of water, and he has stooped down at the feet of his disciples and has washed their feet with his own hands. I don't know about you, but this is kind of uncomfortable. Mainly because I don't like feet, and I don't like my feet, and I don't really want anyone to look at my feet. And I don't want to sit around a dinner table and have somebody start washing everybody's feet. There's just an uncomfortableness to this. But even more so, this is Jesus looking into the face of his disciples and washing their dirty feet. It would be hard to do something like this without making eye contact with the person you're serving. To give you a sense of how weird this probably would have been to the disciples, to have someone they respect do this. If we go back in similar timeline and read some of the writing, for example, Suetonius wrote of the emperor, Roman Emperor Caligula, he chose a very specific way to humiliate senators. He would force them to wait on him in a similar fashion. He would force them to do these kinds of roles of washing his feet to humiliate them. This was something that was very disrespectful to be asked to do. In fact, if you look at ancient Jewish literature, it was normal and expected of a disciple to serve their teacher. But even a disciple, in some literature, said it's going too far to take off the shoes, let alone wash the feet of your rabbi. In a similar way, if you had household servants or slaves, it would be too much to ask a Jewish slave to do this for fellow Jewish people. You would have the foreigner who is the lowest on the totem pole do this kind of work of washing the feet of your guests. And so here's Jesus choosing to use this experience to show the depth of his love to his disciples. By the way, who here would not want to have your feet even seen, let alone washed? Anyone? Like, anyone with me here? Kind of uncomfortable, kind of personal, really intimate, right? So in verse 12, if you heard it, there's this sort of haunting question that Jesus asks. It's simply this: do you understand what I have done for you? Do you understand what I have done for you? Depending on your translation, it may come, do you understand what I have done to you, to bring the force of this, that he's actually done something very direct and personal for them? And this question is really at the heart of our time this morning, this question of Jesus asking, do you understand what I have done for you? If we look at a few verses earlier, we see quite clearly from Peter that they do not understand what's going on, these disciples whom Jesus is washing their feet. This is probably confusing and disorienting, in fact, to have Jesus serve them in this way. If you'll notice in verse 6 how Peter responds when Jesus starts to do this. It says that when he came to Simon Peter, he said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" That's really how we should read it, because that's the emphasis. "Are you going to wash my feet?" And Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I am doing, but you will later understand." "No," said Peter, says no to Jesus. "You shall never," very strong word, "never wash my feet." And Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." Very interesting response. This is not at all optional, right? And so Peter says, "Then, Lord, not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well." And Jesus answered him, "Those who've had a bath," and this word bath also has to do with ceremonial cleansings that you would do when you went to the temple to worship. "Those who've had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean, and you are clean, though not every one of you." So Peter is actually rather incredulous here in how he answers Jesus. He says, "Are you going to wash my feet?" In other words, when he says no, it's like, this is not going to happen. I'm not going to allow you to be in that humiliating position. And Jesus says, "You don't get it, but you will understand it later. And unless I do this, unless I serve you in this way, you have no part with me." Those are really strong words. Really strong response. This is not optional. And so, still not understanding why Jesus could be doing this, perhaps Peter thinks this is somehow tied to something Jesus is going to teach them about baptism or related to those ceremonial washings required for worship at the temple. So it says, "Then, you know, wash all of me." And Jesus makes it clear that isn't what's going on. That isn't it at all. In fact, that's the gist of the statement. You're clean. You don't need some washing, but I'm doing this for you. I wonder, have you ever been served in a really personal way that was incredibly uncomfortable? Have you ever experienced that? When I was finishing Bible college in 1998, 1999, I was co-leading this college and 20-somethings group at a church in Portland. It was awesome. It was a really neat time. We were digging into the scriptures together, this whole group of people. And after one of our gatherings, this really neat guy who was the core of our group, and I don't know exactly what his disability was, but he was in a wheelchair. He didn't have use of his legs. He couldn't use one arm at all and just barely had enough motor skill with the other arm to move the joystick on his chair. He comes up to me after our group, and he looks really distressed and anguished, and obviously there's some urgency to him wanting to speak to me personally right away. And so I pulled him aside, and he couldn't really ask me the question he wanted to ask, and kind of trying to get, you know, you can tell when somebody wants to say something and it's really hard to get it out. And after a couple attempts, I finally realized what he was trying to ask me was, would I help him go to the bathroom? And what I didn't realize at the time was that this gentleman had gone out of his way every week to schedule when he drank things and when he went to the bathroom so he could get on the bus, get to church, be a part of this group, and get back on the bus and get home without having to have anyone help him other than his caretakers at home. And it just hadn't worked out that way this one week. And since he only had limited use of the one arm, he couldn't go to the bathroom by himself, so he had to ask for help, and it was clear it was really humiliating to him. It's really difficult for him. And I suppose he asked me because he knew me, maybe he trusted me. But it was clear the fact that I was one of the teachers in the group almost made it worse, like it was really uncomfortable. And truthfully, this was a new experience for me. It was a little awkward having somebody ask me to go help him go to the bathroom, but like, can't say no, he needs help, right? But it was so clear that it was difficult for this man to receive my help. In fact, it was probably painful to him to receive my help, to be served like that. And it was about as personal as you can get with someone, right? To help them actually go in and go to the bathroom. I share this story because I think this actually gets to maybe close to how the disciples actually felt as Jesus did this. Because this was so over the top, so out of their norms and their expectations, and so personal, and they didn't have a framework to understand why Jesus would take this role of a servant and get down and do this to them. Like, it had to be incredibly uncomfortable. And it's so personal and so intimate. And it broke all their rules for respect and honor. And so in the midst of that, that's Jesus asks this question, right? He says, "Do you understand what I've done for you? Do you understand what I've done for you? As I've been soaking in this text this week, I think it's growing clearer and clearer that quite often Jesus might ask you and I the same question, right? Look at the way we're struggling with whatever we're struggling with, or in the conflict we're in, or whatever it is we're facing, that Jesus might just say to you and I, do you understand what I've done for you? He says this. He says, we'll go back to this text. He says, do you understand what I've done for you? And then he asks them, you call me teacher and Lord. Or he says this, you call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. I don't want to miss that these are, again, really strong terms. The word teacher also gets translated as master. So this isn't like your history teacher. The relationship that these disciples are in with Jesus as their teacher, their rabbi, they were following Jesus, trying to learn his ways, his values, his likes, his dislikes, his teaching, so that they could carry all that on themselves. They were focused on learning to emulate everything that Jesus did. When he stopped, they stopped. When he ate, they ate. When he slept, they slept. Their entire reality, they'd left jobs, homes, everything. Their reality was wrapped up in following and learning from Jesus. They'd committed their lives to him as their teaching rabbi. At this point, they were obeying and living out his teachings. And so this word teacher also could be master. It's a very powerful term, that it isn't just, you know, I sit in your class. It's, you have authority. You have leadership in my life. You have voice in my life. This other term, Lord, this is a word used for someone who owned property. It was used for sovereigns like emperors, right? Leaders. It was an honorary title, respect. And Jesus later is called King of Kings and Lord of Lords. It's this ultimate authority. Both these names denote honor and respect and authority, even power. And Jesus says, you are right to call me these things. You're right to call me these things. This is who I am. But notice what he says in the same breath. He says, you call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. And then he says, very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. It's amazing as Jesus is in the final moments in this meal where he's soon going to be arrested and go to the cross. The manner in which he chooses to show the extent of his love is through this act of personal and intimate service to his followers. And yet in the same breath, he flips the power and the position structures they knew kind of on their head upside down and says, I am your Lord and teacher, and I have done this as an example to show you that it's upside down of what you think the world is. And if I do this to you, you also should do it to one another. Speaking, by the way, not just of the mechanics of actually washing someone's feet, but the manner of service, of selfless sacrifice. And this whole thing about a servant and a master and the messenger and the one who sent him, in other words, you aren't greater than me. If you call me these things, if you see me in this way, if I am your Lord and Master, then you should do this and you'll be blessed if you do it. I think it's hard for us to understand that at the same time Jesus can be Lord and Master, the one who calls the shots, who has ultimate authority, and yet simultaneously care for even us in such a humble and self-sacrificing manner. It seems to us oftentimes that those are separate things, and yet in Jesus they're both the same reality at the same time. As I consider this story in Jesus' words, I wonder if there are times where Jesus sees the way we get caught up in petty power struggles or holding useless grudges. You know, yesterday I was at Costco. I eat almost no bread in my diet at this point, and so I'm at Costco, and I have this glorious guilty pleasure of this chicken bake. You guys have had these before, right? Some of you? Okay. It's like a whole bunch of dough with cheese and chicken and some probably horrible sauce that's not good for you and little bits of bacon in there. And I was very excited. And it was even better because as I ordered lunch for my family and got the chicken bake, like I had to wait for them, which meant they were going to come out of the oven like thermonuclear hot and like really wonderful and crispy, right? So I was pretty excited. And I'm standing there with four or five other people waiting for these chicken bakes. And they kept everybody's name in order of who ordered them. And, you know, they're wrapping all of them. They just came out. And they hand one forward and they say a guy's name. And this lady, like, jumps up and grabs it and starts walking off. And then he gets really mad because that was his. And she took it. And she's really mad because he's making a scene. So I'm in Costco and these people are, like, yelling at each other over, like, a $3 chicken bake. And they're all right there. You're going to get yours in, like, 15 seconds, right? And it looks so ridiculous. And yet, like, that's being human, isn't it? Like, we all get caught in similarly ridiculous, petty struggles sometimes. And I think in those moments where we just flat out don't want to serve somebody, or maybe it looks different than that. We just want to make it all by ourselves. We don't want any help. Or those moments where we might, without even realizing it, we're like grinding through life, trying somehow to earn God's love and his blessings. I wonder in those moments, if Jesus isn't there whispering that same question to us, do you understand what I've done for you? Do you understand what I've done for you? Which, by the way, rather than feel guilt, we should look at the story for what it is and say, clearly the guys who spent the most time with Jesus didn't right away. It took time for them to understand. So we don't beat ourselves up, but we need to hear that voice of Jesus speaking into us in these moments in our lives and just saying, wait a second. Actually, you probably don't understand based on the way we're reacting, right? And we're responding and we're treating other people. We're treating our own relationship with God. Do you understand what I've done for you? One of the surprising aspects of this story in John is the presence of Judas Iscariot. Judas, of course, is the one who betrays Jesus. I would encourage you, by the way, this is John chapter 13. Read it this week. Reread it. And notice, it seems that John really wants us to know the precise chronology of when John is at the table and when John leaves this dinner, or Judas, sorry. He notes Judas' presence at this event in verse 2. By the way, I think there's only two people mentioned by name other than Jesus, and that's Peter and Judas, right? You know, he mentions his presence in verse 2. He references him in verse 11. He comes up again in verse 18. And then the focus immediately after this scene from verse 21 to 30 is the leaving and then the betrayal of Judas. And it seems that John really wants us to know that Judas is present, ensuring that, that is the reader, we don't miss that two of those feet that Jesus washed belong to Judas, the one who would betray him. In fact, the other individual who's mentioned by name in this story, Peter, we find out immediately is also going to deny him. He's going to bail on Jesus. So he doesn't even know him. And it seems that in the way John relays this story to us, he's emphasizing the reality that Jesus humbles himself to serve even those who are getting ready to turn their backs on him. But that's the heart of Jesus. Paul picks up on the same idea later when he writes to the church in Rome, and this is from Romans chapter 5. Speaking of Christ dying for us, he says, you see, at just the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous person, though for a good person someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this: while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Calls it just the right time. What's the right time when Jesus would die for us? It's when we're powerless. That means we are incapable of doing any better, of changing. He calls us ungodly, which is the opposite of doing what God wants. And then he says this whole thing about, you know, somebody who's really righteous and really good, maybe someone would die for them. But conversely, there's you, right? Like, we're not that person. That's the way it reads, right? We're referred to as sinners, and a few verses later, describes us as living as though we're enemies of God. But that's just the right time, the perfect moment for Jesus to serve us in the ultimate way, to give his life as a ransom and as a payment. Not for our dirty feet, but for all our wrongdoing and our brokenness that we can't fix even with our best efforts. It's a similar picture to Jesus washing the feet of the very people who would bail and betray him. Jesus doesn't wait for us to start to clean our act up before he'll receive us. In fact, Paul says just the opposite. It's while we are at our absolute worst that that's the perfect time that Jesus would give his life for us to receive forgiveness and be reconciled to God. While we're the opposite of that righteous person, while we're sinful and ungodly and living as enemies to God. As we consider this notion of that we picked up last week of abiding with or being close to Jesus, one thing I want us to understand is that abiding with Jesus requires often that we receive his love, which can be uncomfortable because it feels undeserved. There's an aspect of this that's similar to the way some of us may not want somebody to see our feet and see the toe jam or whatever else is there or smell them. We don't want people to know that part of us. That's why we hide it, because it's dirty and it's ugly, right? In the same way, sometimes it's hard for us to allow ourselves to receive God's forgiveness because that requires us becoming known and laying ourselves bare before God and dealing with the fact that he really does know all of our darkest stuff, but he still loves us. Abiding with Jesus, being close with him, demands, in fact, that we lay down our feeble attempts to try to earn his love, and rather that we allow him to wash our brokenness just as he washed the feet of his friends. This morning, I just hear those words of Jesus. Do you understand what I have done for you? Do you understand what I have done for you? Similarly, abiding with Jesus means recognizing him as teacher and Lord. It means doing what he has done by example for us. It's very hard to be close to abide with Jesus if we live as though we're on par or even better than our master because we refuse to serve others or give ourselves an undeserved love. When we do that, do you realize we're in essence putting ourselves above Jesus and his example? He's Lord. He's master. And so part of how we live showing that we understand this is that we follow his example. In fact, even now, I'll just pause. You might choose to join me echoing the same prayer if you want to pray with me. Simply this: Jesus, would you help me to understand what you've done for me? Jesus, would you help me to understand the way you've loved me? When our lives begin to mirror this story, when we find ourselves caring for the poor, for the broken, for the people who least deserve it, loving even those who have turned on us or might turn on us, when our lives mirror this story, that I think we show that we truly understand what Jesus has done. I would urge you this morning, if you genuinely desire a life of greater intimacy and closeness with Jesus, one of the best things you can do, if you're not already, is to begin serving others. Begin loving the very people who least deserve it. Intentionally sacrifice for people who can't possibly pay it back. And not out of a lifestyle of religious duty, but when we find ourselves doing this out of joyful response to an understanding of how God has loved us and the magnitude of his love for us, not only do we show that we understand at a greater depth God's love for us, but I find it's very easy to sense God's presence when we're living in that manner. I think it's a wonderful, simple question to just daily ask, do I understand what Jesus has done for me? Do I understand what Jesus has done for me? Gosh, those mornings when I wake up cranky and no one wants to come near me until I've had enough coffee. Because those mornings happen, right? Like, what a great way to reset, to just stop and say, wait a second, do I understand what God has done for me? Do I understand the way Jesus loves for me? It's when we find ourselves sacrificing and loving others and aware of Jesus' love for us that we experience an abiding peace and we walk in a greater intimacy with God. So to that end this morning, I just want to give some practical encouragement regarding service and service to others. And I don't want to just plug stuff at North Park, but I want us to understand that Even in the analogy that Paul would eventually write of the church being a body, that each part has value and each part has importance and all the parts need to work together. It's not like this elective part. It's like that's who we're called to be as followers of Jesus, that we are actively engaged in serving other people. And I recognize at the same time that that may be new for some. And so I will throw out just some thoughts on that. These are by no means exhaustive or meant to be limited, but just some things even here that I'm aware of. You know, we continue to have really great need for one or two people to teach our kids on part of a rotation once every few weeks. And I don't say that to guilt somebody into that, but if you're looking for a way to serve, that's a great way to serve. We're just about to, this week, there'll probably be information coming out. We're going to do Feed Hope again at spring break across the street with Bertha Holt. If you're not familiar, we're going to collect a whole bunch of food to replace breakfast and lunch for kids who depend on the school for that during spring break. Great opportunity to serve. On the tail end of that, by the way, I'm really excited in May. We're going to join with Bertha Holt Elementary and Buena Vista Elementary and some folks from Monroe, and we're bringing Generosity Feeds back out, those of you who remember that from 3 years ago. And we're actually going to package 10,000 servings of beans and rice to go home on weekend support for three different schools. Great opportunities to serve. There are little things like greeting people and doing coffee and stuff like that around here, but there's also just helping your neighbor with yard care, right? There's infinite opportunities, it seems, at the Eugene Mission to serve. If you want to engage with the school, you could go over once a month and read with some kids. You could be intentional this week and reach out to that person who maybe has turned their back on you or betrayed you or bailed on you and love them because the way Jesus loved you. And there's so many opportunities, but I want to challenge us this morning that this is a critical aspect to experiencing a life where we walk with intimacy with Jesus, is that we live a life where we're serving others in Jesus' example. And if we're doing that daily and that's woven into who we've become as people transformed by Christ, I think you'll find that God's presence feels very close. Well, let's pray together. Jesus, would you help me, would you help us to understand what you have done for us? Jesus, would you help me to understand the magnitude of your love for me? Would you allow us this morning to just revel, to celebrate your amazing love? God, would you allow us to walk in freedom from guilt and just recognize that worse than seeing our feet, you have seen the darkest depths of our souls. You've seen the most evil intentions and acts that we have done. And yet you choose to love us. And you've gone to great lengths to extend forgiveness to us. God, would you allow us just to find freedom in that and to celebrate that this morning? Would you empower us by your Spirit in response to understanding your love to go out and to live in that same example, to live your love out so that we can walk closely with you this week? We need your help for that to be reality. So we ask for it this morning. In Jesus' name.